Are we recording?
Yeah. Just keep on talking. This is gold.
Yeah.
Absolute gold. Hello, everyone. This is the Right Dishonourable. My name's Jazza, and I'm back after a week of absence. Did you miss me? Yes, you did.
I didn't.
The person who didn't miss me is Jimmy. Who also is on the right.
That was an amazing intro. That
for was, absolutely no reason, my brain is refusing. I haven't done a huge amount this week, but my brain is still refusing to work. So enjoy that over the next 40 minutes. We're going to have a lot of fun. This is the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about politics and current events and
social issues.
Social issues.
Oh,
thank you very much.
There you go.
Excellent. Rule of three has been achieved in week 11.
Wow.
Yeah, we're in double digits now. You missed that out when you did the thing with John.
I also forgot
John.
To introduce myself in the last podcast.
Yeah.
I did clarify it by the end of the episode.
It's so okay.
Everyone knew what was happening.
You've got at least one super fan.
Yeah.
That's me.
Oh, I thought you meant the girl who complained about Cumberbatch.
Oh, yeah, the Cumberbitch. And we're allowed to call them Cumberbitches because that's their self-identifying name. You and John talked about Cumberbatch being Hamlet and kind of laid into him a bit and told him to pull his finger out.
What the impression I got, because he came out outside and said, you know, this is great that you're like, you know, tweeting about this and filming this, but inside the theatre you can't film. And then he mentioned something about having to restart the show, and then I thought, oh, he had to restart the show because of the filming, which turned out not to be true.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't change the fact that he is a bitch for complaining about, you know, being distracted by red lights in the camera, you know, when he's a professional actor. You know, some of us have real jobs.
So basically, we're bringing this up again so that we get somebody disagreeing with us in the comments on the website again, because that gets us them clicks. Whoop whoop. Fun times.
We did approve the comment though, so that shows
we did.
Journalistic
yeah.
integrity and responsibility.
I don't think that we should start coupling journalistic integrity with the Right Dishonourable. I'll be completely honest.
I mean, it does say on the site banner, as truthful as resources permit.
Yeah, and your resources were terrible.
Yeah, they just went up to the challenge, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So
this week, we're going to continue into this foray of terrible journalism by, first of all, talking about the new guidelines that have been released by the Advertising Standards Authority for YouTube videos and YouTube advertising in the UK.
Jazza has some opinions on this.
I mean, kind of.
Kind of.
Out of the two of us, I'm the person most affected by these rulings.
Most offended by these rulings.
Affected is okay. What I said.
And following on from that, we're going to be talking about Ashley Madison, which is a dating site for people who want to cheat on their significant others.
Oh, how exciting. It's a very British way of doing it, isn't it?
It's just weird. Like, I can I can understand cheating sort of off the cuff, but having to sign up for a fucking website,
that involves
a level of planning that I just can't really...
Yeah, and we'll be talking about the implications of safety online and all of that lovely stuff. We're not just about the sex lives of others, don't worry. We're not going to be that, like, scandalous, I suppose.
Everyone's already written the headlines, so we're just following it up with a sober analysis of what is a very troubling issue in our time.
True, and speaking of sober analyses... we're going to be talking about workplace abuse by Amazon. So we've got advertising standards, an adultery website, and workplace abuse. So this is going to be a joyful episode of The Right Dishonourable.
I'm already enjoying myself.
I knew that episode 11 was going to be special.
Well, wait for episode 13. That's when the real trouble begins.
We're not going to have an episode 13. It's going to be episode 12A.
12B.
Yeah. Here's some music. We'll start talking about these after the music happens.
All right, are we ready?
Yes.
So this week, the Advertising Standards Authority threw a hissy fit because YouTubers, shock horror, have not been labelling their YouTube videos correctly when it comes to, what's the word? Sponsored content, shall we say.
Yeah, it's actually the Committee of Advertising Practices, the CAP, who have now published a series of guidelines to tell people how to kind of approach sponsored content, but it's still really, it's still quite difficult to actually ascertain what one is meant to do if you're doing a sponsored video.
Right.
So it's meant to be made obvious that there has been some kind of collaboration, either within the first, like, few seconds of a video, or before you click in it, so in the thumbnail, or in the title, so or in the first few lines of the description.
To be specific about it, this is about marketers, say, giving YouTubers products or paying them to, say, review books or, you know, makeup or what have you, and then the YouTuber does it. And the Advertising Standards Authority has in the past complained that people are not making it clear that this is a paid-for feature, basically.
So the one example that was reviewed by the ASA was that of Oreos, who obviously who have issues in that in UK advertising they are not allowed to market specifically to children. They saw a load of vloggers who have
Is that legal now?
No. So you're not allowed to advertise sweets and fizzy drinks and like junk food during children's prime time.
How long's that been true?
A while.
Wow, okay.
So they've like bypassed that. That's my official statement. It's been true for a while.
Well, I just remember a couple of years ago you had like that advert with the kid and the dog, and like he was, you know, eating the Oreo in a really, you know, evil way in front of the dog and mocking the dog that you can have an Oreo. It was very traumatic for everyone involved.
Best anecdote ever.
Indeed.
So, and they decided to bypass the fact that they couldn't market directly to children on traditional media by finding a load of YouTubers who traditionally have younger demographics watching them and kind of setting up an Oreo tag that wasn't clearly signposted as a paid product placement, and it was just for about 3 or 4 months a whole bunch of YouTubers got paid very handsomely, but lots of YouTubers was talking about Oreos for a very long period of time. So it's all very strange.
The Committee of Advertising Practice, is that a trade body then?
Why are you asking me this? You know I don't know that.
Well, you should know. You've read the BBC article.
But they're the people who issue the guidance. So the ASA said that this is wrong. So the ASA look at advertising practice and then say, probably should have done it like this. And then the CAP actually tells you what you should be doing.
So this is part of a kind of broader conversation about reining the internet in, because the internet for years has been this kind of...
The Wild West.
The phrase always used is the Wild West.
Yeah. There's just no gold here.
Well, you say that. A lot of people have made a lot of money out of the internet.
Yeah, I have yet to be approached by gold companies to do sponsored videos. I'm still holding out.
I mean, the price of gold has collapsed, so, you know, it's maybe not the best time for the industry.
I was just trying to make a joke, Jimmy. Why are you shitting on my parade?
So, on how outraged would you say you are that this is still going on, that people are actually still doing sponsor videos without making it clear that it is a sponsor video?
Oh, I'm really glad that you assume that I am on that side of the argument, because I think that as vloggers, we do have a responsibility to make it really clear when we are doing.
Well, I've assumed you but we would be outraged, because it's a massively shitty thing to do to deceive your audience in that
way.
So,
can I say something very anecdotal? Off of the back of Summer in the City, I organised the panels, and there was a...
So Summer in the City is the YouTube conference.
Is the YouTube conference, of which I am one, which is why I was absent. I know you all missed me terribly. But I am in charge of panels, and I kind of help to steer the discussions on some of the panels with the panel chairs. I sent a load of questions to a particular creator where some of the questions were, so how do you deal with sponsored videos? How do you choose what kind of companies to work with? And one of the creators said, oh, sorry, I'm going to have to pull out of this panel because I never talk about the sponsorship deals that I do, because otherwise it will break the illusion for my audience. And I was like, wow, okay, have fun in your little dream world. And I think that is a terrible relationship to have with your subscribers, because basically every time you do something sponsored, you're essentially duping them. And
do you think most of the viewers would actually care, though, if they found out that, you know, a particular vlogger that they like was doing this, or do you think they'd just be like, ah?
So when this initial study about the Oreo cookies, Oreo Gate, came out, there was an initial kind of panic amongst bigger YouTubers, because they're the ones who are going to be affected by this. People like me aren't going to
be particularly targeted by the ASA in any way, shape, or form, because I don't think I affect enough people.
Have you done any deals with Oreo in the past?
With Oreos, no. Although, still available. But you had a load of... So, for example, Alfie Days, who is Zoella's boyfriend, he started putting ads at the end of every single one of his videos, because every single one of his videos is sponsored by some product or other nowadays.
It obviously hasn't dented his viewership.
It hasn't at all, but it was hilarious because you watched the comments, and the comments were like, they were having conversations amongst each other being like, what does AD mean? And they were like, oh, it stands for Alfie Days. Like... excellent, great. But I'm genuinely outraged that people go out of their way to avoid these. I think that most of the decent human beings who are vloggers are very happy to disclose this, and they're just more worried about how to do this like correctly, because a lot of the guidelines that have been put out are somewhat open to interpretation. But there are like certain people who have managed to get around this by, for example, setting up business accounts in the US where there are no such stringent laws, so they will continue making like product placement videos.
So how does the arrangement in the US kind of work then? The money goes into a company in the US and then...
Yeah, exactly. And therefore has absolutely nothing to do with UK law whatsoever, because all transactions are overseas.
Right.
And so then there's nothing the ASA can do. Even if the vlog is UK based and filmed in the UK, if the transactions were overseas, there's... at least arguably, nothing that they can really do. So, great that they're clamping down. Also, very little that they can really do if people are actively looking to regulate this in any way, shape, or form.
It doesn't sound as though they are clamping down as such. There's just been some guidelines issued, sort of like post-Leveson-style guidelines for the press.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound as though there's actually going to be any punitive action taken if anyone decides, actually, I'm just going to continue not labelling.
So what will be interesting is when some punitive action inevitably takes place. Because I think that it is only a matter of time before that happens. Because so many creators are choosing to be very shady and secretive about what they get paid. And so it's very different... So, for example, Tom Scar, massive creator, really great guy. Whenever he is on, like, a media interview, he will get asked every single time, so how much do you make? And there is this obsession with how much people make. Mm. That isn't particularly important. But when your decision to make a video and the content of your video has been steered by a company coming on board and giving you some money, that needs to be disclosed. And I don't think that anybody who is a half-decent human being can disagree with that.
But in like the film industry, there's massive product placement in pretty much every big film these days, and there's not a disclaimer at the start of like James Bond that says, you know, Heineken threw some money our way and that's why Bond is drinking Heineken, or walks past a Heineken sign at some point or what have you. So what is the difference really?
I feel like vlogging is incredibly different because there is the illusion of intimacy and of a person giving candid opinions about something. And it's that kind of expectation of legitimacy and of being stripped down and being a normal human being talking about something that needs to kind of be reeled in, that there needs to be some kind of legislation around. Because otherwise if we end up doing just scripted vlogs, then we're just advertising companies and we're no longer creators. And from like a creator standpoint, I think that's why this is particularly important, and why that is different to going to the cinema and seeing a piece of fiction and then being sold stuff through that. I feel like those two kind of things are very different.
But ultimately, it's part of the maturation process of YouTube, it's actually having to admit that it's basically beholden to advertisers, as are all different forms of media. So does this prove YouTube has kind of come of age then?
Oh, bits of it. Obviously, bits of it have come of age. Quite a lot of it is still people mucking around in their bedrooms. And I feel like they are the people who are going to be terrified about this. Because if you have over 10,000 subscribers, you can legitimately do a like sponsored brand deal. And I worry that people are going to be very scared about taking on these kinds of projects, because the industry and the regulators haven't quite yet decided how they're going to deal with the whole situation. And so I worry that it's going to turn off a lot of creators from potentially turning this into a way to get some extra dollar. And I feel like YouTubers should get a dollar for stuff that they make.
But what the whole point about YouTube when it started out and what made it brilliant was actually the sense that it wasn't really a business. And there is the sense that YouTube has just been taken over by businesses. Like, you've got the music industry moving in and trying to, you know, push off copyrighted songs that have been uploaded by people. You've got like very professional YouTube channels such as the Young Turks and things like that. So in a way, YouTube is sort of losing its soul somewhat, isn't it?
I don't think so. Like I said, the nerdy people who were making videos back in 2007 are still there. Hey! and so I do still think that so it is possible to make a living out of YouTube these days. The people who are able to do that are few and far between. It's just they are very salient in the mainstream media's coverage of us. An example, the BBC wrote an article about Some in the City over the weekend, and the headline was, Some in the City event goes ahead without Zoella. It's like, yeah. Like, we had more people come to the event this year than we ever had before, or without Zoella.
Did Zoella pull out at the last minute?
No, they were very open about the fact that they were never going to come. And that was fine. But the fact that it was all seen through the lens of this is a legitimate event only with Zoella just shows how stupid the mainstream media generally is about its coverage of the YouTube community, and it irritates me to no end, Jimmy.
To be fair, the mainstream media do that with every single issue. They love having a figurehead or, you know, some sort. It's like in the technology press now, you write about Uber, even though there's loads of other companies who are doing similar kind of things in terms of you can rent out your car or your house. Obviously, there's Airbnb and that sort of thing. But there do tend to be like these figurehead companies or people or what have you that just...
Is that for SEO? As somebody who works in the media industry, is that for search engine optimization? Because that's what I assumed was happening.
I don't think that's the... I mean, people have been doing it way before the internet came along. I just think that you know that if you write about Uber against some other random company, even if they're facing very similar issues, Uber's probably going to get you more clicks.
Yeah.
You know? And I assume the same thing was true when they... I assume they put Zoella in the title for that summary. That will be why. So that people who are searching for Zoella on Google News or whatever, the article is more likely to come up.
Yeah, but that's just really irritating. So this is like the whole Oh My Vlog thing. It just very... It irks me that the Gleam team... And some of the Gleam team are lovely. But it irks me that they are the go-to YouTube creator. Whereas we have gamers and sketch comedians and short filmmakers and a whole myriad of amazing people on the web. But anyway, we're getting away from from advertising standards. Do you want to ask me anything else about it, seeing as I am representative of all YouTubers everywhere?
No, I'm happy you've done your bit as spokesman for the YouTube community.
Great, excellent, thank you very much. Bye. Is this recording? Yeah, okay.
Is this thing on?
What?
That was a Britney Spears reference. That's,
It's very, very, very on the pulse of me. Is it 1999 again, making Britney Spears references? So are you a little bit too old for Tinder? Do you think that OkCupid is a bit
too... to be too old for Tinder?
Apparently 27, because then you have to pay now.
Oh, shit, really?
I think, yeah. No, there were at least talks about it.
That must be devastating for you, Jazz. I'm really sorry to hear that.
I am 26. How dare you?
I knew you were 26.
Yeah, you're an asshole, though. Yeah. Basically, Ashley Madison was a website for people specifically who wanted to cheat on their partners. I think that that's fine. If you want to cheat on your partner, go for it. Sure, like, who am I to make judgments on other people's sex lives?
Okay, so if your boyfriend cheated on you, how bad would you feel?
I would like to think that if my boyfriend... Let's not talk about my...
Okay, if a hypothetical boyfriend that you do not have currently cheated on you... How annoyed would you be on a scale of 1 to 10?
So my feelings about this are not important, but the fact is that if somebody else chose to cheat on somebody, it's none of my fucking business, do you want?
I
don't think it particularly says anything about the moral fibre of a nation if 30 million people sign up to an infidelity website. I think that it's human nature. And see, the Italians and the French have kind of accepted this for generations, and I think we should get over it.
I disagree. I think that cheating is not good. It does show that you're a bit of a cunt if you do cheat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With the exception of, like, there's some situations where I'm sort of thinking, say you're a carer for your spouse who's really heavily disabled, and you decide, you know, I want some sex, and then you go and do that. There's very certain situations where I think
it would
be all
right.
I want
some sex.
Well, you know what I mean?
Like a Chinese takeaway.
There's certain, well, you know, that's how prostitution works. You know. But yeah, there's certain situations. But in general, if you cheat, you're probably a bit of a bastard. So I'm not really that sorry that your details have been leaked.
I think you're probably a bit of a... I think, like, no, but each circumstance is different.
Oh, fuck off.
This is now applied to every issue.
Broadly speaking, if you cheat, that was bad. I'm sure there are some, you know, there's some amazing excuses as to why you cheated and why it was okay. Those probably do not apply to you if you've cheated.
I cease to care that much. Like, genuinely, if somebody decides... I don't think that that affects somebody's ability to do a job. I don't think that it affects somebody's ability to still be in a loving relationship. I think that this is just... like, the idea of lifelong fidelity is, for many people, unrealistic. And we need to get over...
I think that's true. I don't have a problem with, like, people, you know, having open relationships or polygamous, yeah, polyamorous relationships. Don't have a problem with any of that. But I think
polygamy is illegal. We should probably... which is why polyamory...
I don't have a problem with polygamy in theory anyway. But if you've made, like, a commitment to someone that says, we will only be sleeping with one another, which, still for most relationships, that's implicit whether or not it's ever actually stated.
Mm-hmm.
You should abide by that, you know?
But that is only the case because of the ideals and the ideology that society has thrust down
the throat. No, as I say, if you want to have an open relationship,
I'm not confident having those conversations.
Just do it. You know, if you wait around for
Who are you, Nike? Just do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, every time there's a conversation about, like, you know, social issues or something, it's like, oh, it's really hard to, you know, just not do what everyone else wants me to do. Well, you know, you're a bitch then. Just fucking do it or don't do it, but don't whine about the fact that people will judge you.
This is the second time you've used the word bitch in this podcast, and I'm starting to dislike it, Jimmy. So the reason we're talking about Ashley Madison wasn't just so that we could go off at one another about infidelity, but Ashley Madison was hacked, and its 38 million users' details were dumped online, and...
They were dumped on the quote-unquote deep web.
Oh, the deep web. Isn't it called the dark web?
No, the...
Or are they different things?
Oh, it was actually dumped on the... So the deep web is actually... There's the surface web, which is everything where that's listed on Google, basically. Mm-hmm. And then there's the deep web, which is everything that isn't listed on Google, which, by the way, includes things like if you go on Amazon and search for a book, you've just gone onto the deep web because those pages are not indexed by Google. Mm-hmm. They're actually just created on the spur of the moment. The dark web, which is actually where these details were posted, they weren't posted on the deep web, is everything that's intentionally hidden from mm-hmm. mainstream web browsers such as Internet Explorer, Firefox and Chrome. If you want to go on the dark web, you have to actually go for a VPN, which is a virtual private network, and you have to...
Well, I used one of them when I was in China.
Yeah, there you go.
Exciting.
There you go. So, and this is when we're going to bitch about the mainstream media again. When the mainstream media talk about the dark web, they sort of always say it's full of, like, paedophiles and terrorists and what have you.
But it's used by paedophiles and terrorists.
It is,
and
but
people
it's, also,
who want to buy
it's
drugs.
Also used by activists and, as you say, people who want to buy drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have more uses than just, you know, the bad things as well. There are lots of human rights campaigners that use the dark web and use VPNs.
So do you think that this information dump of all of the details of Ashley Madison users who have perhaps signed up on a whim and then tried to delete their accounts, who maybe had a lapse of judgment, do you think that this is a good thing that everybody's private details and their inner thoughts essentially have been posted to the world?
Well, I guess it depends on if you don't have a problem with cheating, which obviously means you're a scumbag. But
hey.
So, you know, if you don't have a problem with cheating, I guess you'd say, oh, that's really unfortunate, but I think cheating's bad, and therefore, if you signed up for it, if you signed up for it using your real name and your like main credit card, mm-hmm. you're a fucking idiot, and you had this coming. You should have used signed up with a fake name and bought a disposable credit card.
No, I hugely disagree with you.
Okay, go on.
Everybody's entitled to a private life. And what you do in your private life is, frankly, none of my business.
I think
if you want to be a dick in your private life, be a dick in your private life.
This doesn't warrant putting people's
like account details online.
This is like the non-judgmental doctrine, which I also think is kind of horseshit. Like, if you behave like a... It's like that whole thing of when people talk about free speech, they say, oh, you're allowed free speech, but you're not allowed protection from the consequences of free speech. It's like... You're allowed to cheat without you being put in jail, but you're not allowed not to be judged for cheating. So if you're really embarrassed by this, your details have been dumped online, it's revealed that you're actually an adulterer or you've cheated on whoever, or you've planned.
No, but that isn't something that I think is necessarily of. I hate using the word public interest, but I don't think that it shows how nice somebody can be and like the nuanced person. If all of a sudden you find your neighbour's name on this information dump, then you're going to automatically think, oh, this is a terrible person. Whereas actually, they could be a fantastic nuanced human being who does amazing charity work and is a loving father or mother.
You could say this about everything. You could say like, well, yeah, admittedly, he's a murderer and, you know, a career criminal.
No, but cheating...
He's really nice to his mum.
No, but there's a reason that cheating isn't illegal.
I don't think cheating should be illegal, but I still think you're a shit if you do cheat.
No, but I don't think that people's information should be dumped online. And, like, the fact that somebody has chosen to make a private decision about their private life... should be public knowledge. I don't think that is any of my business. Well, if you want to be a dick behind closed doors, and it all is behind closed doors, then be a dick behind closed doors, fine.
So the should sort of explain some background. The hackers that did this call themselves the Impact Team. And
great name.
Yeah, part of the reason, it's really unclear why they did it. They probably just did it for japes, basically.
Just because they could.
Yeah, but they...
Are they linked to 4chan? They're probably linked to 4chan.
Don't judge 4chan. You know,
so I mean, it deserves 4chan... to be...
Oh, so 4chan deserves to be judged, but
yeah.
Adulterers don't.
Yes. Have you been on that website?
Obviously.
It does amazing things, but there's equal amounts of absolutely abhorrent content.
But
one of the
funniest things about this hack, or you maybe don't think it's funny, but the company that runs Ashley Madison also owns Cougar Life and... some other website that I could, like Sugar Daddies or something.
SugarDaddy.com is advertised on the M25 intersection coming out of Brentwood.
Okay, I'm not sure it's SugarDaddies.com.
Oh, okay.
But it's a website for Sugar Daddies, basically.
Yeah, no. So that's what this is. Okay. So there's a billboard on the motorway that has, like...
But I should say I'm not sure it's the same site that's owned. But
okay. Basically,
they actually offered Avid Life Media, which owns Ashley Madison, offered their customers a service. You can pay us $15 and we'll delete your details forever.
Yeah.
It's very apparent that this didn't really happen.
Yeah.
Which is why loads of people's details have been dumped online. Also, charging people to delete their details... that's fucking outrageous for, you know, entirely different reasons. But
so how are you outraged? So if they had actually managed to delete people's accounts and those people's details hadn't been released, you'd have been okay with that?
Yeah.
Why? So why is somebody who's paid to have their details deleted better than somebody who hasn't been able to afford to get their stuff deleted?
No, what I'm saying is I don't think that anyone who holds any like internet company should charge people to delete their data. I think people should have a right to approach any company that does. So say you signed up for Facebook, you've used it for a couple of years, you put loads of photos and stuff, and then suddenly you say, okay, I want to shut down my Facebook account.
Yeah.
I think you should be able to approach an internet company and say, I want all of my stuff deleted. I don't want you holding any of my data anymore.
Uh-huh.
Aside from, sometimes for financial reasons, you have to hold on to, say, certain mobile phone records and stuff like that. Apart from that stuff, I think you should be allowed to delete the data. However,
Jimmy, may I call you a bit of a hypocrite?
In what sense?
Because I feel like that right to be forgotten, which is actually a thing that is...
No. The right to be forgotten is about public posting of mm-hmm. things and about public records. This is about private records. The two are different.
No, but all of these people who have decided to sign up to this account have had their private details released.
They have, yes.
Because of this hack.
Yeah.
So, and you don't have an issue with that, but if they have paid to have their stuff deleted...
I don't think the hackers should have done what they did. However, them having done what they did, I don't feel that sorry for, you know, any of the people who signed up to the service embarrassed.
No, I hugely do, because I think that people sometimes make lax judgments, and I've seen statistics that like half of men cheat on their spouses and a quarter of women or something, although it's probably higher, because who are those half of men cheating on?
Surely they're, you know, cheap. So are we saying that there's, you know, a quarter of all women are servicing these half of all men?
I don't want to make any assumptions.
How does that work? Those numbers just don't add up, unless they're cheating
with
other men.
There are single women in the world. Ah. There you go, sorted.
But men and women, by definition, get married in like roughly equal rates.
Yeah. Well, I just think, what are your opinions on this, internet? Let us know on Twitter at Right Dishonor, and you can also leave us a comment and tell Jimmy that he's a hypocrite on rightdishonorable.com.
I'm not a hypocrite.
You are a hypocrite.
No, I think people...
I really enjoy this, because this is the first time I think that we've had close to an actual argument on air.
I think people's data should be protected. However, I don't feel that sorry for you if you cheated on your wife and now, you know, it's been revealed and she's getting a divorce. I think fuck you.
On that note, shall we move on? Amazon are allegedly dicks.
We've already known this for a while, to be fair.
Yeah, but their service is so convenient. So, basically...
It's so cheap as well.
Basically, yeah, I know. Like, an Amazon Prime is only a rip-off after the first 3 months trial. Basically, Amazon had a huge front page piece in the New York Times last weekend about their business practices and how they weren't really very savoury. They encouraged people to work overtime. People were coming out of meetings regularly in tears.
People were crying at their desks.
Crying at their desks. They basically really not very nice work environments encouraged in the Amazon workplace.
But there've been a lot of previous reports, some of which we'll probably reference about.
For their blue collar workers.
Yeah, right? For the warehouses. The thing about this article, it was all about their head office in Seattle, yeah. Which at the moment has a couple of thousand employees, but they're currently rebuilding it, and it also in a couple of years' time it'll have 50,000 yeah. people working at their head office in Seattle.
Yeah.
Is the plan.
So this is the first time that we've seen Amazon's white-collar practices come under fire. Yes. We've seen blue-collar practices come under fire because basically they didn't have air conditioning in some of their factories where they were in, like, their distribution areas. And during hot summer days, rather than install air conditioning, they would park paramedics outside of the warehouse, recover the people who fainted, and then send them back to work.
I didn't realise they sent them back.
They sent them back to work.
So that was 2011 in Pennsylvania.
That was 2011, yeah. And one of the most shocking things that came out of this particular story was the fact that people who were had family, like outstanding family circumstances, like relatives dying, or who got sick from, for example, cancer, they were put on efficiency evaluation or like that.
I think the standout story for me was there was a woman who had a miscarriage, and she had surgery, and she then had to fly out for a business meeting the next day because her boss just said, you've got to go, we can't, you know. Well, that's what's alleged in the piece anyway. The piece was drawn from 100 different people who used to work at Amazon or still do work at Amazon. There has been Jeff Bezos, who's the chief executive and founder of Amazon, has said that he doesn't recognise the description of...
So I'm going to say this in two different tones of voice and see if you can tell the difference. I don't recognise this Amazon, and I hope you don't either. Or, I don't recognise this Amazon, and I hope you don't either. Written down, that particular sentence can come across as either oh, don't worry, guys, let's have a group hug, let's be Google. Or it can come across as, yeah, I hope you don't recognise this terrible practices that are happening under my nose that I apparently don't recognise.
So I think one of the most, that was in an internal memo, but one of the most striking things...
That was then made public, I just want to make it clear that we haven't... Yeah. This isn't investigative journalism, by the right dishonourable, that's not going to happen for a while, I don't think.
Or if ever.
Yeah, ever.
But, like Google and Facebook are famous for having like incredible benefits for their staff, at least, you know, in the in Silicon Valley.
Google
in
have
San
amazing
Francisco.
Lunches, really good lunches.
Really
they
good
have
lunches.
Sushi every day.
But they have like on-site gyms, on-site barbers, bicycle repair shops, and, you know, all sorts of fun
volleyball
stuff.
Volleyball courts.
I mean, most people who work in Silicon Valley at some of these companies, I imagine, do work pretty long hours and work pretty hard. But it seems like there were this was kind of a known thing in the tech industry that Amazon was a fairly like hard taskmaster in terms of making people work hard. After the piece came out, this this engineer who currently works for Amazon said that this was the piece did not reflect his experience at all. The New York Times public editor, who's a kind of auditor, I guess, of the pieces that they put out, said that maybe the piece wasn't balanced, but the editor of the New York Times stands behind it. And it seems to me there are it's drawn from so many sources. The substance of it must be true, or at least used to have been true, even if maybe it's not so true now, right?
So I have a good number of friends who are part of the booktubing community in the UK and across the world, actually. And they have, for several years, boycotted Amazon and its services because of the fact that it undercuts bookshops, which are wonderful places to be, generally physical bookshops, and also because of the treatment of its employees. Essentially, at the end of the day, if we see that Amazon is making terrible and like slightly questionable decisions about its business practices, isn't that the job of the employees to leave if they don't like it and maybe go and work for something a little bit more cushy at Microsoft or Google?
Well, allegedly the staff turnover was actually very, very quick. So people used to spend a year or two at Amazon and then move on, generally speaking.
And then as consumers, if we read stuff about this, how much is the onus on us to not use their services anymore?
I don't feel anywhere near as bad about the white-collar workers as the blue-collar workers. Because, as you say, these are...
But they were crying at their desks, Jimmy.
Yeah, but they're very skilled people. They could move to another company. You know, they're there essentially by choice.
It's
I imagine,
Seattle. They could work for either Boeing or Microsoft as well.
Or, you know, move to another city. That's also possible.
I mean, they've got a lovely Space Needle. It's very pretty. And the world's first Starbucks. Go on, you're making a point.
No, well, but the blue-collar workers, I imagine, like, in terms of labour mobility, just not on the same scale, like not any, you know, anywhere near the same scale. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, it still sounds like a pretty terrible place to work.
They are, in theory, going to suffer from a high rate of turnover of employees. And so, like, in terms of, like, business practice, like, just let them get on with it, right? And then, in terms of us as consumers, now that we know this, what's the chance of us actually being able to make a difference by perhaps choosing to boycott their services? Are people going to boycott their services because, you know, Amazon is ubiquitous in terms of online shopping?
Well, I mean, there've been similar allegations about all sorts of shops over the years, and I don't think any of them have actually, you know, shut down as a result of it. I mean, people do arrange boycotts, but Amazon has such a huge share of Amazon is now the biggest retailer in the world. It used to be Walmart, and in the last couple of months, I think it's changed to being Amazon.
And just wait for Alibaba to overtake it.
Alibaba had a lot of problems like coming over to the US, and actually they opened this online store called 11 Main, which they eventually had to sell on to someone else, another company who admittedly they do have a stake in now, but their attempts to actually get into the Western markets have largely failed. The big battle now is in India.
Yeah, but
that's
where all of the growth is going to be. Is going to be in India and Southeast Asia and East Asia
and Africa
and
as well.
That's where they're already well positioned. And so Alibaba is going to overtake Amazon eventually, I think.
Yeah, I mean you're probably right. I think,
what's the onus on us as consumers to make decisions about our purchasing practices?
Well, I think if the blue-collar thing didn't, like, sway you, I don't really see why the white-collar thing should. you know, for the reasons.
It's just, I feel like this piece is just a nice reminder that Amazon's not a lovely place to work.
Well, I mean, will it stop you? Because I'm not sure. I don't think it will stop me from buying stuff from Amazon.
I mean, so I saw the story come out and then purchased something for my brother for his birthday.
I need to buy something from Amazon.
Yeah, well, because I needed it the next day. Because it does provide such an outstanding service.
Yeah. They obviously get results out of their employees.
Yeah, clearly. So. And it's going to be the only place you can watch new episodes of Top Gear very soon as well, isn't it?
See, I think the whole Top Gear deal, I wouldn't switch from Netflix to Amazon Prime just for Top Gear.
No.
Sorry, Jim.
And I feel like Netflix is on the polar opposite because they now offer a year of paid maternity leave.
Yes.
So I feel like Netflix are the fluffy, nice version of online video, as opposed to Amazon Prime being the evil one, I suppose.
So it seems that we've decided this stuff's really bad and we're going to do absolutely nothing.
I know! I'm going... No, so Jen, a friend of mine wrote a thought piece in...
A thought piece?
Yeah, I thought, fuck off.
We used to call those opinion pieces in the old days.
Stop being a patronising bastard. One of my friends did a thought piece, okay.
We're not using that word.
In
did they upload some content to the internet?
Indie hashtag content in Indie Voices. My friend Rosianna, who is one of my BookTube friends who has been boycotting Amazon for the past few years, and she basically said, if you don't boycott this company, then you're a shit human being. I may be paraphrasing.
Wow.
Does that make you feel bad at all? It should.
Well, if she thinks I'm a shit human being, then I suppose I'll have to change my behaviour.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. Decided then.
I mean, I do own a Kindle, so, you know, obviously I'm still going to have to buy books off there. You know,
yeah, you're tied in now, that's the problem.
Yeah, I've made a capital outlay now, so, you know, it's all over. I'm stuck to this legacy system.
Is there anything else that we can really say about Amazon other than, oh god, this is a bit shit, but it's not going to really do anything?
Well, it does sound as though... So, an Amazon executive who is... I don't know the name of, but apparently went on the record saying, we used to burn people out. And it sounds as though this is a problem that...
Not in terms of, like, grievous bodily harm.
No,
but...
He was using, you know, imagery. It wasn't, you know, literal.
Yeah, great.
Hopefully.
What is this imagery in words?
But it sounds as though this is a problem that they have actually known something about. If judging by the executive's comments, which were actually referenced in the piece by the software engineer who I talked about earlier. So maybe they'll make it better after this piece, and maybe people, you know, people in Silicon Valley, the engineers, software engineers, have an awful lot of power. There's not... There's greater demand for them than there is supply. They can command huge salaries. They should be able to get some reform at these places if these problems exist. So
what I thought was really interesting about the Bezos piece, that his response, that was an internal memo to everybody, was the fact that he basically said, "If I want you to report this to HR if you see any of these practices happening, and even email me directly if stuff is getting out of hand in your particular part of Amazon. None of this is the Amazon that I recognise." I just feel like that is a ruse to get all of the people who can't stand the heat out of Amazon.
Possibly. I mean, some people said, well...
Watch heads roll!
Yeah, it's not the Amazon you recognise, Jeff, because you're CEO and you can just sort of, you know... Well, I mean, that's a whole conversation about how useful management is in general. But
I feel like it's an interesting thing... I saw more similarities with Amazon and kind of like the financial sector, especially in London, more so than I do with Amazon, with the other companies that it gets lumped in with as like a tech company in terms of like the Googles and the Facebooks and stuff. And in London, we've had some regulation has come in terms of how many hours interns can work because a couple of people have overworked themselves in the financial industries on internships to the extent that they have died. I think it's one or two people over the past few years. Do you think that this is a case for government stepping in and making sure that business practices don't break people?
Well, in the US, they don't even have paid maternity leave in a lot of states. So I think there may be a little bit... They're a distance away from, you know, regulating the number of hours people can work, let's say.
Is this going to be a problem in terms of white-collar work in the Western world as technology speeds up and human productivity is going to continue to have to increase? Oh, are we just going to keep on working?
This is a whole conversation about like automation, and we have definitely not got enough time to go into it. Possibly, let's say. Mm. I don't know how to answer it. It's like, you know, it's just there's too much to talk about within that.
Well, so Jimmy has cleared that for six, well out of the conversation park. Cricket there. Reference. Great. If you guys would like to know more about the whole automation thing, check out CGP Grey's video called Humans Need Not Apply.
No, don't watch that guy. Don't watch that guy.
He's amazing. I love him to
bits. His video on the monarchy was so wrong. It was just so wrong that I don't trust anything by him now. There's a great book by a guy called, and there's talks on YouTube if you can't be fucked to read, by a guy called Andrew McAfee, and Eric Brjonson. I'm not going to spell that. But yeah, they've written a book called The Second Machine Age, which is far better and far more nuanced in its opinion than CGP Grey.
Well,
but yeah, you could watch CGP Grey if you really want.
CGP Grey is a good source.
I just don't trust him. I don't trust him anymore.
I've never trusted you, and I fucking work with you.
More for you, then, I guess.
What do you, as a consumer, this is me asking you, dear listener, are you going to be changing your consumer practices now that you know that Amazon can sometimes be a bit shit to its workers? Do you think that you have an obligation to do so? Do you think that Amazon should be allowed to treat its workers however the hell it wants? Let us know on Twitter, at Right Dishonor, and on the internet, at rightdishonorable.com.
Yes.
We're going to go now. We'll see you next week, won't we? We might have a guest. I'm going to try and get a guest.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, who are you thinking of for the guest?
I don't know. If anybody... So, of the people that I spoke to over Summer in the City who said that they would want to be a guest, text me, and the first person to text me can be the guest.
You're going to get no text.
I'm going to get no text. Nobody's going to... Nobody would have gotten to this point. But hey-ho. Or just tweet me. Anybody listening right now, if you want to be a guest on the podcast, just tweet us.
You're just cock-teasing them now, you know.
Why did you have to bring cocks into it, Jimmy? For fuck's sake.